You're with SBS Radio.
Around two-thirds of Australians are currently living overweight or obese. In fact, late last month, the Dietitians Association of Australia put out a new report to say that the national nutritional policy in Australia hasn't been updated in over 26 years. In the report, it is projected that by 2025, a mere 6 years away, 85% of men and 75% of women aged 20 years or older will be overweight or obese. The problem boils down to nutrition. How much do we know and how much do we think we know about what our bodies need? According to the report, less than 1% of Australians consume a diet consistent with the Australian Dietary Guidelines. So, what are we eating? According to Global Trend Analysis, some of the most fashionable diets in 2018 included the keto diet, the paleo diet, and the low-carb, high-protein diet. While all diets focus on nutrients that come from so-called healthy foods, they are in their essence restrictive. Focusing particularly on high-protein consumption, a recent study, one of many on the topic, has concluded that high-protein diets can in fact lead to reduced health and lifespan. Professor Chris Proud, leader of the Lifelong Health Theme at the South Australian Health and Medical Research Institute, was also the lead author on the study that analysed how our bodies process protein on a molecular level.
So the study was published in Current Biology just a few days ago, and what we were aiming to discover was to learn more about why high protein diets might shorten a lifespan based on lots of data from other people, particularly from the Charles Perkins Centre in Sydney. They've shown that lower protein diets are associated with longer life and less incidence of disease, including brain disorders.
He says that high-protein diets are generally associated with a shorter lifespan.
And one of the ideas that's around trying to understand ageing is that ageing arises because of more and more damage in the cells of our body, which ultimately make them fail. So that contributes to the ageing process. And we were interested how high amounts of protein in the diet might create more damage. And when we eat proteins, those proteins are broken down to their building blocks, which are called amino acids, and we then use those amino acids to make the proteins that we need. All our cells need lots of proteins to function. Nearly every job in the cell is done by a protein. So you would think that more protein would be good because we need those amino acid building blocks to make our own proteins. What we discovered was that when cells make proteins, they make mistakes, actually. Occasionally, they make an error when they're making a protein. And the faster they make proteins, the more errors they make, which is a bit like typing. If you try to type too fast, you might end up with a garbled email or text message. So it's a similar kind of analogy to that. And importantly, when we have more amino acids available, the building blocks for making proteins, then we do make proteins faster, and that therefore causes more errors, and this may well be a contributory factor to aging.
And while he agrees that high-protein diets are good for weight loss, like many diet trends and fads, they aren't a long-term solution for the majority of the population.
High-protein diets are good for one thing in particular. They're good for weight loss. And of course, losing weight is in general a good thing if you want to be healthy. But in the long term, high-protein diets seem to have this adverse effect. So consuming a high-protein diet for a short time may be okay, maybe help you lose weight. But over a long period of time, as studies in many animals have shown, high-protein diets aren't good for you. They shorten your health span and lifespan and are associated, for example, with a higher incidence of cancer.
Professor Proud reiterates that the study is not discouraging protein intake, rather emphasising that it needs to be adjusted to individual requirements.
There are two groups of people for whom more protein is important. One is children, because they're growing and they're making muscles and other tissues that need protein. And the second is people later in life, probably over around 65 years of age. Those people can suffer from problems of muscle loss, which makes them more liable to fall over and hurt themselves badly. So in those people, low protein diets are not recommended. In people over 65, they should go to a somewhat higher protein diet. The people in middle life, I wouldn't like to put an exact age on it, but say from 20 to 65, who should be focusing on this kind of low protein diet. We do need protein, can't go too low. There's a minimum that we can't get away with less than, but there's also a maximum that would be deleterious, that would be bad for us. So it's a balance, making sure you're consuming the right amount of protein, not too little, not too much.
Australia's problem with weight comes from that lack of balance. High protein diets are just one type of high impact diet that, when strictly followed, can yield notable results, with results that come relatively quickly. Long-term sustainability and effectiveness are compromised. Practicing nutritionist, lecturer in nutrition and research fellow at RMIT University in Melbourne, Dr. Jess Danaher, says the problem isn't specifically with high protein diets, rather with the lack of personalized diets that are manageable long-term.
Look, a high-protein diet can be effective, and really every diet that's ever been promoted can be effective. They all work, and they all work for a little while. The issue is that they cannot necessarily be adhered to in the long term. And if weight loss isn't successful in the long term, then the diet is not successful either. In terms of who we should be recommending it to, well, that's going to differ as well based on the individual. So all dietary interventions and all dietary recommendations should be made to suit the preferences and the needs of an individual.
Dr. Danaher says that all diets focus on the same four principles: restricting intake of a particular food group or macronutrient, modifying portion size, limiting the frequency of meals, or increasing a particular food group. What makes a diet successful, however, is its ability to be incorporated long term.
Now, with a lot of these diets, the studies have shown, and I'm not just talking about one individual study, these are meta-analyses that combine a lot of studies together and see how effective a diet is at working. A lot of them show that any diet will work for about 6 months, and then usually people just start to gain weight after that. So long term, it's really hard to maintain that weight loss. Losing weight is easy, but keeping it off is the hard part.
Dr. Danaher says it is imperative for individuals seeking to make dietary changes to consult a medical practitioner or nutritionist first.
So we don't want to have a diet that excludes certain foods or nutrients that's going to inadvertently cause another dietary imbalance or a deficiency, because that could lead to different health risks. So it's important to find out from your doctor if you have any health conditions that might affect changing your diet or having an extreme change in diet, such as following a high protein diet, before you do start to embed those dietary principles into your diet. So the recommendations are going to be changed based on different health conditions. One for a high protein diet is it's particularly of a concern for people that might have kidney disease. So if you're at risk of kidney disease, then certainly you should be consulting with your medical practitioner before implementing any dietary modifications.
Dr. Danaher's own research is currently exploring tailored nutrition plans based on individual genetics and requirements.
So my research has a look at what you should be eating based on your genetics. And that's because we know that there's no one-size-fits-all approach. The best diet, although not very sexy and not going to sell a lot of books, is a diet that's sustainable and results in long-term weight loss. So it's not so much the diet chooses. The diet itself is quite irrelevant, and adhering to it and having some level of support, whatever that might be, is going to be better at sustaining weight loss. So based on your genetics, and there's a whole lot of other underlying factors that can influence a person's ability to respond to a diet, but based on genetics as well, there's a broad spectrum of individual differences. And this is why a person might be doing really well on a particular diet, and they'll happily tell the world about it because anecdotes and personal experiences drive a lot of popularity. But it doesn't mean that what working for one person will actually work for another person.
Though diet trends and quick fix solutions have been rampant since before the emergence of internet and social media platforms, Dr. Bhuvar Narayan, senior lecturer at the School of Communication at the University of Technology Sydney, says that social media provides a quicker and more widespread way to share information.
Trends have existed as long as humans have existed, and mostly it would take time for a trend to catch up and, you know, die down or become something new. And now with social media, it can be something, a small craze, for example, that could happen within a small group of friends or community, might generally stay there, but now it spread outward, outside of that community, and then it catches on much, much faster because of social media. So I believe it just enables something that we already crave for and need in many ways.
She says that though social media provides a quick and accessible platform for information, it isn't to blame for spreading misinformation. Humans, as they always have, continue to pick and choose what to believe, depending on what suits them.
To some extent, humans do want to select information from what is available. And often when they select and choose the information, in research we call it berry picking, like, you know, you just pick the nice fruits that you like, which may be already confirming your existing beliefs. And those are the ones that you will choose. So if you're a person who loves, meat and protein, then this kind of protein diet is much more attractive to you. Whereas if you're a person who loves, your carbs, maybe some other diet that pushes carb and asks you to cut down protein might be more attractive to you. And everyone will see some result from a drastic change in their diet anyway, so something to prove to others that it's working, but it may not be long-term.
Dr. Narayan says that people need to be alert and informed when it comes to the fitness and health industry.
So in a way, I don't think social media is, it's just a vehicle for our communication. So it's just much faster, and it has its disadvantages in that some people might believe things at face value without looking at evidence and so on. But not everyone does, and people also believe the bad stories at face value, and some of that may be true, and then they may stop that diet. So, without blaming any diet or any fad, social media simply enables what humans actually already want to believe and want to see in their sort of specific worldview.
Enjoy more stories in your language by visiting sbs.com.au.